Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
All right, so let's bring in the outstanding and a staple of this show for good reason, Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
As always, it's a treat to be here. I hope you guys are having as lovely a day as it is here in the Twin Cities area.
We are. It is gorgeous here today. Can't say enough about how great it is. The draft, of course, is coming up. I don't think anybody noticed. And today, the Lions made a trade. Jeffrey Okuda was traded to the Falcons for a fifth-round pick. He had been the third overall pick in the draft. And when he was picked, I didn't like the pick because I watched him play in person a few times. And it was like, okay, he's good, but third overall good? No. Neil, do these guys do enough looking at prospects beyond just what they see on film or in combines?
It's so funny that you ask that. A colleague of mine, Doug Farrar, over at Touchdown Wire, and he and I had multiple conversations about Okuda with Matt Patricia, who was in charge of the Lions when they drafted him. And it was less about where they took him and more about how they were going to use him. And they used him in almost the mirror opposite fashion of what you would think Okuda's best game would be. Yeah, it really, his highest and best was not playing that upfront, aggressive, pure press man coverage, which is what they wanted him to do. And he barely played that in college. It wasn't really the skill set that you saw looking. Where the issues come in, especially at cornerback, is how they feel his skills will translate to what they do. And it, more simply put, it really comes down to, do you fit the scheme to the player or to the scheme? How do you want to do this? Set that guy up. And Frisch clearly did not have a whole lot of success as a head coach in any measurable fashion. He wanted the scheme to be the end-all, be-all of everything. And that's, I think, right. That's the failure there. And, you know, corner, it's so, in so many ways. You have to rebound better than what you were physically, but you've got to completely block that out of your mind. And when you're playing something that you're not comfortable with, it's even harder to do that over and over. Now, we repeat this process over Patricia had him for 2 years, didn't he? Or was it just one? Over that amount of time, you're going to build up a few issues. And I would imagine Detroit, looking at the contract situation that's coming up for him, and Okuda, in his representation, knowing there's a certain style that he wants to play in, kind of narrowing his market down, he'll get paid. He'll earn an extension. I could see why it wasn't going to be necessarily a great fit. It's not because of Patricia, but at the same time, it is because of Patricia that he's in Detroit to begin with. And he shouldn't have been. Whether that was 3, 9, 12, it wasn't the scheme for him. So when they get to free agency, they have a little bit more control over that. But if a highly drafted cornerback reaches free agency, something bad happens. You don't let those guys go. So it damages him a little bit. I don't know if he's able to kind of reach that top five level financially, but I would be confident in Atlanta, that runs a little bit more off coverage. They can probably make a little bit more hay out of him than Detroit could. But I'm going to guess Detroit, for the same reasons they let TJ Hockenson go, to Minnesota, a division team, for not an incredibly huge haul, decent, but not great. It's because of the contract that's coming up. And he doesn't fit with them long term. That could be a schematic issue. That could be a talent issue. It could be purely just a financial issue. And Detroit, I would guess, considering Hockenson is a very good receiver. They want to run the ball. If they're committing the 2-3 years of their franchise purely to what they're doing at that moment, it's a schematic decision, and they weren't going to pay Hockenson to catch 45 balls and block all the time. The money that he can command in free agency is going to be more as a pass catcher. And he was, you know, the second highest targeted player on the Vikings after he got there and he started playing. So it seems like both sides kind of fit for that. With Okuda, I would imagine in Atlanta, he's going to be given more opportunity to think that he does while he's still fairly cheap. But there's not a whole lot of time until he hits that contract level. The fact that he only goes for, what was it, a fifth-round pick, I'm going to guess, he wants a new contract. He wants it now. So yeah, there's risk involved with Atlanta taking him on. But they're getting the better end of that deal if they're willing to throw a five at potentially a high-level, high-skill cornerback that might not have quite found his footing yet in the NFL. And there's no timetable for that. He can still continue to improve. Like you said, in college, he was raw. He wasn't a highly technically skilled player. You know, if we were, you mentioned the draft too. If we're going to get into it, you watch a guy like Christian Gonzalez. You see yep. polish with him. He's ready. He's not the physical beast that Okuda is, although I'd argue he's not far from that. But he's got a lot more polish. He's not going to go 3 overall. So there's something to be said about the draft class that he's in. But with most cornerbacks, it really just comes down to how the team schemes them. And they don't seem to translate well with what they've watched of him in college, how they've discussed whatever with him, and how they want to use him as a pro. And I think Okuda is an excellent recent example of that problem.
Well, this is a question of, here's my scheme. I don't care if you're a square peg, round hole. We're drafting you. And this is where I wonder how much guys watch games. I'm going to give you a name right now that should be watched as an offensive tackle in the NFL in the draft. Darnell Wright, now of Tennessee. Why am I mentioning Darnell Wright? He spent an entire late afternoon into the early evening one-on-one with Will Anderson, who, by the way, I think is going to be an outstanding NFL player. And Will Anderson never got close to Herndon. Never got close to him. That, to me, is the kind of practical application that tells me, watch that guy.
It's great that you're saying that, because one, I'll say this: Darnell Wright is the draft's best kept secret right now, which is to say, the draft Knicks aren't talking about him. That doesn't mean teams aren't talking about him. You're going to see him go a lot higher than people think that he will. He's multi-positional. He's the meanest potential tackle in the draft. I think he has as much talent as anybody else who's there. He's not the prototypical size, but if that's that big of a deal, you could play him at tackle or guard, and you're going to get a high-level player. I absolutely love him. I think he's a beast waiting to happen. Now, oddly enough, if you want to connect this, you know where he would be really good is Detroit.
Yes,
they'd absolutely
right.
love him in that scheme. Their ground game, it doesn't really matter, guard or tackle. It's a matter of their space and their area. You could get a lot out of him there. And your point about Will Anderson, yeah, Will Anderson looked like one of the Steelers' backup offense or outside linebackers. He killed him. It wasn't competitive.
Yep.
Clearly the better player in that matchup. And you're exactly right. Will Anderson's a great player. he's going to do things in the NFL. It just shows the value name recognition, in some cases school recognition. He's Will Anderson. You're going to give him a pass. But when it's a guy from Tennessee that steps up and whips him pretty good, you're almost conditioned to think that it's a fluke. And I don't understand that at all. That's why at some point, oddly enough, I think it was Doug who had a mock draft with Wright going to the Steelers at 17. I was like, I don't think he's going to go 17. You know, in all honesty, I think he goes higher than that.
Yep.
You watch Skoronski play. I don't know if I see a real difference between those two.
I saw Skoronski
size
play.
Guys. They're both the kinds of players that you would want. I mean, they're NFL starters for sure. And in the tackle position, those guys don't go lower than 12, 13, something like that. I don't understand why Wright would not be considered that. But I would say this: if for whatever reason he's on the board at 17, I hope Steelers fans don't think that that's a reach or anything like that, because he's an excellent player. He's going to be really good. And I, you know, to your point, I have no answer for that. If he would go lower than that, I'm not sure why. Maybe because they don't see a prototypical tackle. I barely even know what that means anymore. I don't think it really matters. I think in today's game, in zone offense, zone running, pass protection is in many ways a group effort, but the ground game absolutely is a group effort. Whether you're a guard or a tackle, if you can reach and extend to the second level and lead a block downfield at the second level and beyond, you have value regardless of where you line up. There's a cost issue, and I get that, but for a team like the Steelers that just doesn't draft tackles in round one, he's the type of tackle they would definitely really enjoy having on their team, and he would justify 17 very well. He's an excellent player. I absolutely love the fact you brought him up, too. Not enough people talk about that guy.
Well, again, you want to know why it wasn't a fluke with Will Anderson? Because if he had stoned him for two quarters and then Anderson got, you know, three or four hurries and a couple of sacks in the second half, all right, it was a fluke. He adjusted. He shut him out time after time after time. At some point, it's not a fluke.
I would take him... You know, it's not a great tackle draft. And in all honesty, right, to me, you know, the draft is about potential. It's about traits.
Sure.
It's about where a player is going to go. Past the elite of the elite, though, you really have to focus on what they did, who they did it against, how much can you improve whatever they're not doing well, how coachable are they. Everything that you hear about Wright is he's a road grader, he's a pure football player, he's mean, he's nasty, but he's a team leader. He's going to be out there for you fighting with everybody else. To me, he's first-round pedigree for sure, but I think he's a premium guy, and I think he showed that. Whether, you know, trait for trait, he's no Will Anderson. You know, we're not going to say that. But
right, no, that's exactly right.
Look at like Rashawn Slater too, for example. You know, you can't coach the size of that guy. He's absolutely enormous. That's going to boost his stock a bit, and he's built on that to become one of the best in the game. They'll continue to be that. A guy like Wright, I would bet on because I think he's a plug and play. I think he can play immediately, right or left. I think he can play inside. So he's a four position offensive lineman as a rookie with good experience against top level competition, and the bona fide is to show. Not only he played against the best, but he beat him too.
Yeah.
I would take a guy like that over the prospect, the kid from Georgia, for example.
Yes.
Great tools there, but he didn't know how to block. he's not there. I'm not, you know, this is not to say that a guy coming into the league needs to be Anthony Munoz. It's just that you look at one, he's polished, he's refined, he can play year one. The other one, he's got some work to do on some very basic things. And that's a lot of college football today, too. You have to understand that the highest of the high, the high-end five-star guys, they're going somewhere and they're going to play immediately. And the team is going to make absolute certain that they play immediately because that's how they recruit them. You can't recruit a guy like that and say you're not going to play in year one. They want to go play because they want to go pro in 3 years. They're going to set them up for success in that regard, and you don't get to coach them on the technical stuff as much because you're setting up your scheme to focus entirely on their strengths and hide their weaknesses as much as possible. Can't do that in the NFL. So there's going to be, of the high-level prospects, there's going to be some glaring problems with a lot of them. I remember, it wasn't even all that long ago, but 10 years or so, it came out, and not that the people that know weren't aware of this, but it came out, you know, for the draft public. Nick Saban didn't teach his defensive backs backpedal. Dre Kirkpatrick was the guy that the Bengals took, I think, at like 17 overall, and he didn't play a whole lot his rookie season. And Marvin Lewis, who was the coach at the time, was asked why, and he said he doesn't know how to backpedal. Everybody freaked out about it like it was some huge thing, but it's common to know that there are those deficiencies, and it takes a little bit to learn them to the point that you can use them. George Pickens, if we want to translate this well over to the Steelers world, if you ask a Steelers fan right now, George Pickens went off for 105 catches, 1,800 yards, and 20 touchdowns last year. And he didn't get the ball enough, according to them. He didn't get the ball enough because he doesn't know how to run routes. He's not a good route runner. You can see it in his game. There are only some things that he can do.
Did I not say that last year?
Yeah. And at the same time, let's not fault him. You know, he played 12 games his last 2 years of college.
That's exactly right. That's the reason.
So he's a second-round pick and a first-round talent because you've got some work to do with him. And you hope he puts in the work. I think that he will. It was, you know, never an issue of his work ethic. He'll put that in, and he'll become a better player. But he's not plug-and-play. He's not a day-one guy. Makes spectacular catches, but he's not like a nuanced, true NFL receiver yet. Shouldn't expect him to be either. That's not a problem. It's just the level of expectation that you get from fans when it comes to where guys are drafted, what their highlights look like. The fundamentals of the game need to come, because if they're not there, he's not a hard guy to stop. And let's be honest, he had to do some pretty miraculous things to come down with the ball, because he was blanketed in a lot of those cases. Not like, you know, Kenny Pickett isn't throwing him open or anything. He has to do a lot to catch the ball because he's not that good at getting open yet. And that will come. We'll see that. But the same deal with Darnell Wright, he's at a pro level. You know, he's a rookie. He's going to get beat, but he's much closer to his ceiling. And to me, I would think a team like the Steelers that would really appreciate having a left tackle that's actually ready to play the pro game, that would be of high value to them. If he's there at 17, I really could see him being their guy. If he's not, then you know, there are plenty of people that know a lot more than I do. But I don't get it. They would be very happy to have him at 17.
But you know what is interesting that a lot of people don't realize? There are some NFL coaches and GMs that will call a college coach and say, hey, can we talk? And there are some teams that don't.
And that
baffles me beyond words why you don't call the college coach. Because, look, they're all like, you can have honest coach conversations about what a guy can and can't do. Okay? And a lot of NFL teams don't do that. And people assume they do, and there's, I'd say, half to two-thirds do and a third don't. And you can guess which third doesn't.
Yep. Most of it is hubris. And from what I've heard, it's younger coaches that don't want outside interference. They don't want the opinions of other people that might be slanted or jaded. Okay, I don't, you know, first off, you use the word opinion, which is really what this is all about. It's ultimately a subjective pursuit. You can't get past that. If that's going to be your stance, then everything you do only comes down to you. That's not good decision-making. You know, you don't want to fall into that trap. At the same time, though, and this kind of goes into the conversations that we had about interviewing at the Combine. If you can't find people that can just ask normal questions and determine realistic answers from somebody, you've got the wrong people doing it. It's not the process. It's who you're putting into that room. How could one football coach not call another football coach after having reviewed a player and asked them a few questions and determined pretty quickly how genuine they're being with their responses? You know, I can't see how that's even possible. If you're covering up for your guy, any NFL coach should know that within 15, 20 seconds. You'll know pretty quickly. Time is valuable, I get that, but at the same time, you've got to go through the process. You have to go through those things, because the coach at the end of the day is the one that's going to know the kid. better than anybody else as a person and as a competitor. What I hear most of the time is the coaches call the college coaches that they know. And it's like, that's, you know, if you want to talk about bias and subjectivity, it's even worse when you're talking about it from that end. I would, I don't know, if it was me, I have no problem calling the coach up and just asking what they think. You know, get some background. If for no other reason, just confirm or deny what I think I know from watching and from what I've talked to the kid about. I don't know why they wouldn't do that.
It, again, what you and I just talked about, I'm going to venture the vast majority of people listening didn't realize. And there's so much stuff that's inside baseball that I think would surprise people, and that's one of them.
I'd put that high on the list. What seems incredibly complicated is usually very simple at that level, and a lot of the very basic common sense stuff for us is not a standard operating procedure at the NFL level. And you honestly don't know why sometimes. It's an insulated world, and they all kind of come from some connection to everybody else, and they all kind of learn one way. It doesn't look like that would be all that efficient from the outside, and maybe it's not. But the big thing is a lot of them don't trust outside influence. They don't trust non-football people to talk about common sense stuff. And, the results on that are mixed at best.
Interesting conversation. Neil and I never plan out where we're going with this, and it ends up really great every week. So, Neil, my friend, we'll talk next week. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.